If you want this podcast free of ads, follow us now on patreon.com/David McWilliams.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
To understand the economy, you have to understand human nature.
This podcast is powered by Acast.
How you doing there? It is podcast time. And there's a lot to digest. A lot been happening, a lot to happen. Hope your weekend was fine. Hope you're feeling good. How are you, John Boy?
I'm good as always, Mac.
Good as always. John and I are trying to put a really good face on it today, but it's all good. How was your week? All good?
All good. You know, I was laughing my ass off watching the news all week about the Boris.
Oh, Johnson.
And it's just unbelievable. Every day there's more stuff coming out. And, you know, Partygate's been going on for months and months and months now. And it's kind of boring. But they're now the Tories are turning on him. But he is that Teflon Don who's kind of getting away with it. Yeah. So far, anyway. But then he turns up in India. You know, he scarpers off to India. And all the pictures in the press are him looking like an Egypt with a big turban on his head.
Well, this whole, remember last week, Mark Little talked to us about chaos monkeys.
Yes.
And he was saying that Elon Musk is a chaos monkey, right? Boris Johnson is a chaos monkey.
Yeah.
Right? And it's funny, I've just come back from Belfast. I was up in Belfast at the weekend and I was giving a speech to the Irish League of Credit Unions, right? And I believe the credit unions are actually part of the solution to the problem we're going to talk about later on in the podcast, the housing market, right? It's an enormous source of finance, which has got enormously brilliant understanding of its local area. It was also started by John Hume. And John Hume thought, this is fascinating, right? The Derry Credit Union was set up by John Hume. Remember we did a riff on the Undertones being financed by the Derry Credit Union? Yeah. We know Undertones, it wasn't the Derry Credit Union. But his idea was that access to capital was part of human rights and civil rights, right? And because up north the nationalists weren't being given access to capital because the banks were amazingly, as it seems now, and it's amazing the turn in the north, they were Protestant-controlled in the 50s and 60s. They didn't give the Catholics or didn't entertain the Catholics.
Catholics
couldn't get finance. So Hume said, hold on a second. We have our own finance here. Why don't we set up a credit union for us? So part of the civil rights campaign was the credit unions. And it's always a joy speaking to credit union members and credit union managers, because what you have is local finance for local people fixing local issues.
Yeah.
And it was great. And of course, the interesting thing you talk about Johnson, right?
Yeah.
Do you know, you see they're actually playing around with the protocol again.
I know.
Actually, and this is his thing. You know, when he gets into trouble, it's like he floats these kites, like he floats them. Last week was Rwanda.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
This week it's, well, we don't need the Northern Irish Protocol. So it's always engineering a fight with somebody, deflecting from the whole thing. But the problem is that the UK, at its fundamental basis, right, has subscribed to and signed up to the rules-based multilateral system. When you sign a treaty, you sign a treaty. Like,
yeah.
Putin's the opposite. Putin's like, when you sign a treaty, you know, as Adolf Hitler said, treaties, they're there to be broken. That was Hitler's idea, right?
Yeah.
What you have in the UK is they're signing treaties and they're breaking them. And of course, they're weaponizing Northern Ireland, as they always do, ahead of the election in May, on May the 5th, because the Shinners are probably going to end up being the number one party there.
But it's a dangerous game he's playing, because, you know, if Johnson and Britain become known as treaty breakers,
yeah,
serial treaty breakers.
Rogue states.
Yeah. Like, he's in India at the moment trying to set up a free trade agreement. And, you know, he's trying to set up all these free trade agreements around the world with individual groups. People are going to be looking at him going, hang on a second. So we've agreed to this. Are you sure you're going to stick to this or what?
Yeah, or hang on a second. We had a free trade agreement with the EU up till 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You looked at, now you want another one. And of course, in the Indian mind, right, never forget that the only foreign leader who went to the celebration of the establishment of the Indian state, the only one invited was Eamon de Valera.
Right, yes.
In 1950 in Birmingham. So they wanted to announce the Indian state. So 1947, the Indians get independence, right?
Yeah.
1950, they have a celebration in the UK for the first time. They weren't allowed to have it in London by the Brits. So they had to have it in Birmingham.
Yeah.
And the only foreign leader who came was de Valera. Why? Because Nehru and de Valera were really, really close. Because Nehru, it's an amazing story. Nehru, right, the leader of... So you've got Gandhi, the leader of independence.
Yeah.
But you've also got Nehru, the leader of the Indian state, right?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
In 1907, Nehru is in Dublin, right? Because his brother is in the College of Surgeons. And he writes home to his father and he says, I'm watching this Sinn Féin people here in Ireland. And the amazing thing is what they're saying, and he quotes, is that freedom won't be given to you. It has to be taken. So the connection, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So what
yeah.
I'm saying is, so Johnson's there in India talking about, but deep in the Indian psyche is a profound dislike of those upper-class Brits. As Shashi Tharoor wrote in his book, when Britain arrived in India, Indian GDP was 31% of global GDP, and when they left, it was less than 3%. So all that's going on. But the idea in the North is that, again, what they're doing is deflect, deflect, deflect from Partygate or whatever.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So
the chaos monkey,
the chaos monkey is
a perfect description of
okay. Him. Boris Johnson, you heard it here first, is the chaos monkey of the British Conservative Party. And there are many chaos monkeys in that bleeding party. So I was there, I was in East Belfast at the weekend. Do you know where we're going to speak in terms of Irish culture?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. Announce it there.
Tommy Ligdull, good Inish man on Sahar Shakun. Tosa agus misha, agus baimi ag iarracht on podcast a yeanav os gaeliga.
Togama.
Three gaeliga. We'll do la berla, la gaeliga. Berlicus.
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 I'll do the berla bit.
You do the berla bit. I'll do the gaeliga bit. Well, I'll try. Baimi ag iarracht on gaeliga bit.
Yeah, they'll be laughing at you.
They will be a goira. Do you remember that one?
They'll be
a goira at us. But anyway, we're going to Inish Man, Saharan Shakuin, and John and I are going to be observers at the Inish Man 10K, but ni veimid egre tushka wilma kus brishta or la brishta. Yeah, okay, and how's your Ned? Brishta.
My Ned is seriously brishta.
Tashe lawn August brishta. Okay, so it's the Dahimok Liam podcast, O Inish Man. They sound shakuin, August. We'll do it inside in the pub. There's a great pub. Chok Tavorna, Inish Man.
Yeah.
Ta neil aun ok pub awan, Erniline. And it doesn't really shut.
Excellent.
That's what we're doing it from.
To a long juck shall we have.
Beg a long juck. A gwing. Beg. Okay, enough of that. Enough of that Gaeliga. Okay, we'll move on. Actually, we should do a lot more Gaeliga.
Yeah.
Air on podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
No.
No, not for you. Okay. Wow. All right.
So tell us, what do you make of France this week?
Oh,
did you see any? I mean, we were just talking Irish there, but I don't understand the French either. But you could see the body language was amazing.
It was great. I was watching the debate. I watched it on France 24. And it was on last Thursday, no, Wednesday night.
Wednesday, yeah.
And the body language, Le Pen's body language was much, much, much better.
Mm.
France dodged a bullet there, right? They got scared. 4 out of 10 French people voted for extreme right.
Yeah.
And if you look at prior to the runoff, 6 out of 10 people voted either extreme right or extreme left. So you're talking about a country really ill at ease with itself. But again, when they saw it's either Le Pen or Macron, they went for Macron.
Yeah.
But Macron's body language was his body language was like an arrogant, her body language was good. He was just kind of looking at her.
She was kind of cool, actually.
She was cool.
But he was, you know, smug. arrogant, dismissive.
Globalist.
Yeah, it was all of that. Yeah, he was just...
But he was on top of his brief.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And, you know, the question is, does Europe want a France run by Le Pen, close proximity to Putin, at a time when Germany is getting the heebie-jeebies? No. And I think the French people just said, not this time. But again, if you look at the graph of the right wing in France since the 70s, into the 80s, every single election they do a little bit better and a little bit better and a little bit better because the issues are real.
But you know, the first round, is that a little bit of a misnomer? Because you just said like 6 out of 10 people voted either extreme left or extreme right.
Yeah.
Are they just doing that because they can?
Yeah.
They're just voicing. They're never going to follow through on that.
It's like the European elections here. The reason the European election throws up loons like fucking the bankrupt builder who's become a Marxist, what's his name? Wallace.
Oh, yes.
And those ones, right? And the reason, because the European election doesn't matter to us, right? It's over there. We're voting for, it's like voting in the Romans used to vote for emissaries. You know, the Ovid, the poet, Ovid was jailed. Ovid was sent, now this is good because I'm reading fucking Roman shit now.
Right.
Ovid was sent to Dacia. Dacia is Romania. The reason the Romanians speak a language which sounds like Italian is the Romanians are Romans. They are Romania, people from Rome. And their place, you know the car, the Dacia?
Yeah.
The province was called Dacia,
right? Okay.
And that's where the Dacia Duster comes from, okay?
Yeah.
And the Romans used to do it as a big skip to throw all their ne'er-do-wells in there, right? It was a big, like, you know, if you went offside...
You were banished to their area.
If you went offside and they didn't want to kill you because they thought you were okay, you were thrown...
You might be useful later on.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So they threw you into Dacia and poor Al Ovid was sent there for writing pornographic poetry in his old age, right? He was a great man for the poetry and then he got a bit frisky. It was the porn hub of the ancient world in Dacia, right? And the European Parliament, I always think, is the same. Kind of, it's like, yeah, whoever, whatever, you know. And I think you're absolutely right. So the first round is like, I'm pissed off about the world and I'm going to vote for the extreme fella.
Yeah.
And then
the
second round is, all right, we've had the fucking afternoon kiddies time.
Yeah.
It's adult play as the fellas who understand GAA say, it's what do they call it? Senior hurling.
Yes.
Right? Junior hurling, right? But interestingly, what you see is Le Pen modifying her position and changing her position. And becoming more and more acceptable to more French people.
And more skilled, actually.
Yeah.
In her debating and in her whole presentation.
Yeah, but let's not forget that her ultimate idea is the sanctity of the race.
Mm.
Okay, the purity of France. It's totally against, despite what the PR people say, it's against immigration, completely.
Yeah.
It's against globalization. It's against European integration. It's against actually all those things that, for example, the Ukrainians are fighting for.
Yeah.
Right? It's taken for granted. What it's about is purity of the race. It's an ethno-nationalist vote.
It's interesting.
And it's I think, like maybe a lot of people in the podcast might disagree. I think it's really dangerous.
Yeah. It's interesting because I was watching a Vox pop of kind of local French people because she did it during the week. She was touring around, obviously. And various Vox Pops and the interviewer was saying, so do you not think that Le Pen is racist? No, she's not racist. She's just puts France first. And that's the, you know, it's just a play on
semantics
words.
Semantics and it's language.
Yes, it is. Yeah. You know, but that's kind of powerful in itself. I'm not racist. I'm just putting
first. It's very, very powerful. And it's an underlying, the interesting thing about humanity is humans do like to hang out with people who are like them, right? Humans, we existed in tribes.
Yeah.
The notion of language, the notion of common culture, the notion of common norms, the very notion of the nation is based on an ethnic purity idea, right? That we subscribe to these things, right? And Europe is a great example of that because Europe of the nations themselves, are all ethnically originally conceived. But now in a globalized world, you have to really moderate that view. I think you should, because what you have, and we're going to talk about it on Thursday with Mark Blythe, you have basically the war has given you two choices of how to run the country, right? The war in Ukraine.
Yeah.
You have the ethnocentric Russian view, which that to be Russian is actually nothing more than the geographic expression of a deep culture, right? And you have the Ukrainian view, which is that we are Ukrainians, we speak Russian and we speak Ukrainian, our president happens to be Jewish, right? we want to be part of the liberal order. So we want to be Slavs like Poles, but we want to be Slavs like Poles with a Western face.
Yeah.
And of course, the Russians say to be Slavic, you have to have an Eastern face.
Yes.
And you have to have a Russian face. So these discussions, we will talk about them. We talk about them on Thursday, right?
Sure.
They're
sure.
really essential. But again, it has been fascinating to watch the French elections at a time when, and we're going to talk about this again, the rate of inflation is rising. And the rate of inflation, when it rises, affects poor people more than rich people.
Yes.
And Le Pen, her single greatest card, I believe, wasn't race, but it was the idea that poor people in France, or poorer people in France, are now going to pay more of their take-home wage on essentials, whereas the rich people can deal with that because their take-home wage is so much greater. I was interested, I was looking at Christine Lagarde of the ECB, right?
Yeah.
A lawyer who's actually everything that Le Pen detests, right? She is a lawyer. She worked for a big American law firm. She is a globalist, all that.
Yeah.
But she's also a politician, right?
Yeah.
She's Macron's choice. And what you find is the French have always been amazing at getting their top guys and girls into crucial positions in the World Bank, in the IMF, in the United Nations,
yeah.
in the ECB. That's part of French diplomacy. But she's doing something.
It's very Irish like that in many ways.
It is very Irish, but there's lots more of them.
Yeah.
And but what is fascinating is she is saying on inflation in Europe, she's taking the view this is temporary. So she's betting the entire credibility of the Eurozone. They're not going to raise interest rates in Europe. And the Americans are raising interest rates this week. Apparently the Americans are going to raise interest rates this week by as much as half a percentage point.
Wow, and that's a lot.
It is a lot. And the Europeans are actually waiting and seeing what happens. And the reason, of course, is that the ECB does not want to be responsible for a recession in Europe at a time of war. So the interest rate decisions they're making are not just predicated on the rate of inflation, they're predicated on the entire orientation of European policy.
Yeah.
And it will be quite interesting. So those of you who are watching the euro very closely and watching interest rates, thinking about that, thinking about markets or whatever, our bet is that the Europeans drag their heels on interest rates and allow the Americans raise rates as quickly as they want, and the Europeans won't.
But just on the inflation thing, I mean, there's two things, actually. In France in particular, Macron has been quite good at capping prices of oil and stuff and trying to...
He's taking the John Davis view that you advocated a month ago.
Yes.
Yes, he is.
See, he was listening. I know he's a huge fan of the podcast. I know he is.
Friend of the podcast, actually. Friend of the podcast.
But the other thing is that, you know, you hear the inflation argument a lot in America in particular. And, you know, in America, it's all politics is all finger pointing. But pointing fingers at Biden. Biden's got very little control over inflation.
Yeah.
But they're weaponizing the whole inflation argument as if it is some individual's fault.
Of course it's not. I'm going to make a prediction here. Dave McWilliams' podcast is going short the oil market now.
Ooh, okay, right.
I think
just explain what that means for a
second. I think it's peaked, right?
Right.
I think basically, what has happened is, I think if you've lots of money, John, which excludes you and I from this thing, right?
Yes, yeah.
What you should do now is before the oil market begins to fall, so the price of oil, $120 or whatever dollars a barrel it is now, right? I think it'll be back down at around 80 quite soon.
Really?
Yeah, I think what's going to happen is, because there's a great expression in commodity markets, which is that the solution for high prices is high prices. And what it means is that what happens when prices are very, very high, and we've talked about this before, particularly in commodity markets, as a result of maybe a tightening or a war or supply chain issues or whatever, is that the very high prices coax other producers to come on. So, for example, in the case of oil, the cheapest place to produce oil in the world is Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Okay, because the oil is just under the sand. Right?
Yeah.
So you basically just drop a small well.
Yeah.
The most expensive place is probably fracking in the United States. Right.
Right.
So fracking only becomes economically viable at, let's say, $90 a barrel, whereas Saudi is viable at $27 a barrel.
Ooh, okay, right. Yeah.
So what happens then?
Huge difference.
So as prices go up, right, as oil prices go up, right, those mining efforts that were priced for $90 a barrel at $140 a barrel become actually quite profitable.
Mm.
So you get a whole surge of high cost producers that come because they're validated by the high price.
Yeah.
This then floods the market with supply and prices fall back down. And what you find is those mines, those fracking mines go out of business, right? This is why they're always on the really speculative end of investment.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
If you want to go to the juicy end, in fact, this week, a guy passed away called James Dines, D-I-N-E-S. And he used to write an amazing newsletter called the Dines Newsletter,
right,
which was at the funky end of the investment scale. He was into uranium and fracking, and he's a gold bug. Really brilliant writer. In actual fact, somebody that I read for quite a while, didn't always subscribe to his views, but the way he wrote was beautiful. But that's the idea. That he was always saying, you know, the solution to high prices. So right now, what's going to happen in oil is loads and loads of high-cost producers are going to come in.
Yeah.
They're going to flood the market, and at a certain stage, prices are going to fall. And what we know about oil prices is when they start to fall, there's a momentum on the way up and on the way down. And against the background of global warming, oil prices have to fall because we're making this shift. So structurally, you know, burning dead stuff, which is in effect fossil fuels, is the energy of the past. Renewables is the energy of the future. And although we're seeing a spike in energy prices now, long-term, energy prices will come down because the source is going to come down. And that's why Christine Lagarde is taking this view, like, what's the point raising interest rates? Back to your point, if you raise interest rates, we said it before, interest rates are the price of money.
Yeah.
If the price of energy has risen, the only impact of increasing the price of money is a recession, right? Because the recession then kicks demand downwards, then demand disappears, then prices fall, but you get higher levels of unemployment. And what Lagarde is saying, at a time of war, I'm not going to be responsible for a recession.
Well, from recession to house prices.
From recession to boom.
To boom. Boom to bust, bust to boom. Coming up after this.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com. Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
John, do you know what the most terrifying thing? There are many terrifying things in life.
Yes,
but for me, one of the most terrifying things is talking to tradesmen, people who can do things. You know, my late father-in-law, Billy, used to say to me about my inability to do things practical.
Yeah.
He used to say, you should have your shoelaces taken away from you. Meaning that, you know, you're so handless. He used to call me, you're absolutely handless.
Handless.
Okay. Right.
So just handy and handless.
I was absolutely handless, right? And the idea was that taking the shoelaces away, because I'm a danger to myself with my own shoelaces. Right? This is very, very deep Belfast carry on. But I was sitting at home the other day talking to two plumbers.
Not one, but two.
Two. And it is a total head fuck for me because I don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And of course, Shan is changing radiators. Only my missus in the middle of an energy crisis will be changing radiators.
Probably high efficiency radiators in fairness to her.
But interestingly, bought in Belfast. So the two lads were saying to me, they're just saying they're out the door with work in the construction centre. They were saying you can get anywhere around here, the sites are working maximum, right? Mm. And they said there's any number of what they describe as small jobs. So jobs and houses like ours. But I was asking them what the story is. They said the price of materials is shocking. And they go up to Belfast to buy things. even though Belfast, they said it used to be much cheaper, it's now not that much cheaper. But they're just saying like wood, piping, radiators, the stuff, you know,
right.
The nuts and bolts of plumbing.
Gone. It's a fair amount of money that's leaving the country then.
Well, it's a huge amount of money that's leaving the country, but given that half of the construction industry are actually from the north anyway. Have you noticed that? Have you noticed all the Armagh flags in Dublin on big, if you look at cranes in Dublin, right? You've two flags always sticking out the back of them. Mayo flags.
Mayo, I was going to say. I see Mayo, Mayo
and Armagh flags, right?
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Armagh great scaffolders, right? Okay. South Armagh in particular. I wonder why. Anyway, that's the thing. But we were chatting then about house prices and they were saying, look, obviously all this cost is bleeding into house prices and the latest data on Irish house prices, extraordinary. Irish house prices have grown by 15.3%. So Irish houses are 15.3% more expensive this March than last March. That's in one year, okay? Nationwide, house prices are up. I think the year before, house prices only rose 3% the year before.
Yeah.
They're now up 15%.
Well, in fairness, there is the COVID factor.
There is the COVID, but even still, it is phenomenal.
Yeah.
It is phenomenal, right? Think about the data, right? So nationwide, house prices are up 15.3%. Apartments are up 14.3%. The cost of apartments in Dublin surging 17.8% higher than a year ago to buy. Okay,
yeah.
House prices across in the rest of the country are rising higher than house prices in Dublin. I mean, if you look at these, these are double digit. The reason is very simple, because of the COVID. Lots of people are saying, I'm going to buy my house in Mayo, or I'm going to buy a house in Galway, and I'm going to work remotely or do 2 days a week and I can commute and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But what you're seeing is this extraordinary surge in house prices. In a sense, the government has lost control of the single most elemental issue that they've nailed colours to, which is reducing house prices. Because they've lost control of it, because these are double-digit rates of inflation, right? And just to give you a sense, okay, house prices have recovered by about 117% since the trough of 2013. And now, this is the scary thing, they're only 3% off the Celtic Tiger peak.
Jesus.
Peak!
Yeah.
In 2007, right? Now, extreme house prices, extreme increases in price of anything. We were talking about oil earlier on.
Yeah.
This is not healthy, right? Because extreme house prices, extreme prices tell you there's something fundamentally wrong with the market, right? There's something wrong at its very depth, because again, income should be the foundational price of homes, because all homes are paid for, most of them by mortgages, and mortgages are a function of income. So what we're seeing is house prices going this way, incomes remain static, okay? And after inflation, take-home incomes falling. So what you can see, it's an extraordinary thing. Think about affordability now, right? Average home in Ireland costs 330,000 euros, the average in the country.
Massive.
Yeah.
It's
now,
massive.
Now think about income. The median disposable income of a household with two working adults, right?
Yeah.
Is around 50 to 55 grand. This is their gross income. Is about 80 grand, but their take-home income is about 55, right? This means house prices are completely unaffordable at the average.
Yeah.
Forget about going into various different things. And of course, that's just looking at buyer's market. Think about renters, right? Because many, many people just want to rent. Loads of people, you know, are
Of course.
Now, the fascinating thing was that 2 weeks ago when you had the COVID, right? I went to London to see Lucy. And I went to a couple of bars in Hackney with her and her mates. These bars in Hackney, it was in one called the Spurto Arms.
Spurto Arms?
Yeah, the Spurto Arms
in
Hackney.
Not a great name.
No,
lads.
It's not, but it's a nice boozer though. It's
right,
a nice boozer.
Fair enough.
But we went in, and it was just myself and Lucy, and all you heard were Irish accents.
Right.
All listening to the new Fontaines album, by the way.
Oh,
which just dropped.
Which is a fantastic album.
Exactly.
Has to be said.
But they were actually voted the best band in the world by the NME.
Right, yeah.
Which
is
a little bit of a heavy fucking burden. You know, not the best band in Hackney, you're the best band in London, best band in the world. But anyway, the extraordinary thing was a hugely substantial amount of the punters in the bar last Sunday night were young Irish people. And the vast majority of them have left because of rents. And I'll give you some figures about Irish rents now, right?
Yeah, go on. Like, in fairness, though, before you do that, London rents aren't the cheapest though either.
But you know what they say is what you get for your rent is better. You get a better gaff because the quality of Irish stuff is appalling, as well as the price being very high, which is a function of what we want to talk about is not enough building, right? But just give you a couple more figures. Let's say graduates, right? The average graduate salary is 35 grand a year, including all bonuses, right? Leaving them with a take-home pay of around 29,000 euros per year, right? Yeah. This is in Ireland. That's about 2,400 euros a month, okay? Or about 560 euros a week. So that's what the average graduate's. The latest DAF report shows that the average one-bedroom rent in Ireland is 1,407, right? And the cheapest postcode in Dublin, Dublin 22, monthly rent, the cheapest for a one-bedroom flat is 1,295, right? That's more than half of a graduate's pay packet. So it's impossible for a graduate, so let's say 25, 26, to actually live alone, right? It's completely impossible, right?
Yeah.
And therefore, they've got to share rooms. They've got to get a room, right? And the cheapest room in the city is 590 a month, which is, again, a week out of their pay packet. The cheapest room, right? And then you go back to the quality, as you've seen. And if you've seen on the quality...
Crazy house price things. He puts up some mad, mad places.
But that's reality for people. And I remember I was teaching in Trinity a couple of weeks ago, and I was talking to all these young Indians and young Italians who were studying Trinity, and they loved Ireland, but they just said, man, get a grip of this housing thing, right? They were talking about in places like Turin, you can rent a flat for 280 euros a month. A flat.
Wow.
And Turin is like, it's not Milan, but it's a big, substantial Italian city. So, of course, the question is then, why are all those kids in Hackney? Because they couldn't be arsed paying rent here.
Yeah.
Even though we've a huge, huge surplus of jobs. And then, of course, what's the solution? The solution is build more and build quicker.
But you know what? Have a look around town at the moment and around this area, Dunleary and all the rest. There's a lot of new building sites. There's a lot of land being cleared.
That's what those plumbers were saying. They're out the door with work.
Yeah.
But we need to do it more and more and more of it, right? And the interesting thing, John, the housing market in every country reflects the society. So there's rich people, there's poor people, there's in-between people. And that means what has to be built are rich people's houses, poor people's houses, which have to be subsidized, in-betweeny houses, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, the idea that we should only build houses for the very poor is not going to solve the crisis. And remember I talked about, because people shunt on, right?
Yeah.
When you have a housing crisis, it's like the market for secondhand cars in Cuba. Do you remember we did that?
Yes. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So my friend who passed away, Desmond Boylan, who Cal and his mates did the transition year with in Havana, Desmond Boylan had an 8-year-old Renault car, right? And it was really, really
battered
old yoke, right? It cost him 50 grand. The same car would cost you, right?
50 grand in Cuba.
Yeah. The same car would cost you on done deal about 1,200 quid.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. Yeah.
So how do you think a country that is poor like Cuba has incredibly expensive secondhand Renaults, and a country that is rich like Ireland has incredibly cheap secondhand Renaults? And it's due to the fact that the Cubans have limited imports of everything. So they can't import American stuff cars, right?
Yeah.
So they only import secondhand cars. But because those secondhand cars constitute the very best car in Cuba, think about it, all the people who are working for foreigners and maybe have a bit of money or a company might pay for them, get those secondhand cars. So ironically, when the market is completely strangled, the price of really shitty quality goes up, not down. So think that in the back of your head now.
Yeah, that's
interesting. Think now about Irish house prices, right? When the market is strangled because of planning objections, the price of shitty flats goes up, not down. So, and the reason is the following. The flats that used to be the preserve of middle-income people, right? Because not enough has been built, rich people buy those flats, right?
Yeah.
So their price goes up. So the middle-income people end up buying the places that used to be reserved by poor people.
Yes.
Right? Or poorer people,
which is why
you get barristers living in council houses in Ireland.
Yeah.
All the time, right? And of course, the kids who are brought up in council houses around here, right, you'll notice that they live actually in Gorey. they live in Wicklow. They've moved out to get more space, right?
Yeah.
So you see that all the time. That's the Dulcies, the Dublin Culchies, right? And the people who are at the bottom end up homeless. So it's a shunting on process based exactly on the same idea as the second-hand car in Cuba.
Yeah.
So what you have to do is you have to flood the market in Cuba with cars for the whole thing to adjust properly, which is why the second-hand car on Done Deal costs 1,200 quid here, because the market is flooded of cars. You might not say that's a good thing or a bad thing, but that's how the dynamic works. So now think about house prices, right? So what we know is the problem in Ireland is not enough homes,
which
is why shitty homes cost a fortune, right? And the rest of the world laughs at us because they say, you paid that much for that crap.
I know,
right? Keep your Cuban cars in the back of your head, right? The solution for Ireland is to build more homes. Posh homes, poor homes, good homes, in-betweeny homes. And therefore, huge amounts of planning restrictions means homes won't be built, which means the price of crappy homes goes up and Irish people suffer living in terrible places for New York City style rents. Right?
Yeah.
And then we think, okay, well, what's actually going on? And this brings me to something I've been really kind of trying to grapple with, right? And it's about, I was reading a guy called Noah Smith. We've had him on the podcast.
Yes,
very brilliant. He's got a
the man who loves rabbits.
He likes a rabbit. He likes rabbits and Yeats.
Yes.
What's not to love? Rabbits and Yeats, okay? But he talked about a new class that he saw emerging in America. And I think it's very interesting. And you know, we've heard about the precariat class, right? So these are young graduates, educated. I call them the educated but excluded, right? In the past, if you got, let's say, a university education, it almost guaranteed you a decent income because there were so few university educated people and the premium of that type of education was very high. Now what we have is a very precarious educated class. It's basically a class that is experiencing downward social mobility for the first time because they are educated, but they can't find the right jobs. So they find precarious jobs. And those jobs are jobs that kind of vaguely think of. And that used to be a kind of an interesting observation about society. Now I think it's becoming the norm for people in their 20s, right?
And are these from a particular sector of community? Or are they looking for jobs in a particular sector?
No, in everything. So what you find now is that...
But there's buckets of jobs.
There are buckets of jobs, but they're not... There's a great book by a guy called David Graeber, who died very suddenly last year, called Bullshit Jobs, right?
Right. Okay.
And he's talking about jobs that are...
This is one of them.
Now, this is a proper bullshit job, right? But bullshit jobs, he's talking about jobs that just, you know, you go through the motions... They don't really give any satisfaction. They don't really have any end game because they're usually in large bureaucracies, big companies, all that sort of stuff. But what you find is that the people who have these precarious jobs are squeezed between some of their former colleagues who have proper jobs and rising house prices. So every single year they stay in the precarious job, houses and rents get higher and higher.
Right.
So they get frozen out of the market increasingly. So what began at the age of 22 as a pain in the ass, by the time you're 30, becomes existential verdict on life because you're completely locked out. Now, Noah Smith calls that, they're called the precariat. Noah Smith calls them the haute precariat, like the haute bourgeoisie, which Marx talked, right? And they're basically hyper-educated children of reasonably well-off parents who are now faced with the situation that not only will they not ever live in the town they were brought up, nor in the city they were brought up, but even if they live in the city, they're going to live on this, in this kind of precarious never world.
Yes.
Where landlords can kick them out, where they don't have a stake in society, all that sort of stuff. And to get back to Le Pen, right?
Well, actually...
Because the youth voted for Le Pen.
Yeah.
And why? Because, not because they're racist. It's not that. You know, French youth hang out with, you know, Arabs, blacks, whatever. They all hang out, right?
Yeah.
It's because they're precarious, because they've lost the moorings of society. That idea of, you know, there's a gradual, I always think that social mobility is a bit like a conveyor belt.
Yes.
That you get on the conveyor belt and you do the right thing and gradually you actually move upwards. As if by magic. That's what economic growth is all about.
Yeah, Yeah.
But that's stopped for a huge amount of people.
So the equivalent then in Ireland would be the Shinners.
Precisely. Precisely. The people who are voting Sinn Féin have moved away from, they're not United Irelanders, you know?
Yes.
They might, that might be an added bonus,
yeah,
but it's not the driving force. They're not nationalists.
That's more notional.
Yeah, it's more an aspiration, right? What they are saying is we are the precariat.
Yeah.
We are the haute precariat even. And we are voting because we are losing our grip, our stake in society.
Yeah.
You know, and I see this happening all the time. So what you see then is that the very young left are voting for parties that at the moment are objecting to loads and loads of planning. Why? Because they framed the housing debate in a class war. Now, if you oppose planning, right, and you do it a lot, the Shinners are doing it a lot, who benefits? The people who already own homes, the middle class, middle class like you and me, benefit from the Shinners blocking planning all around Dunleary, for example, or all around South Dublin, or all around Dublin City, or North Dublin, right? The only people who benefit are the people who, by sitting on their asses and doing nothing, get wealthy because their house price increases. So in a way, a lot of the young voters have been hoodwinked into an ideological prism, which is making their position more, not less precarious. And I mean, the danger, and we'll conclude here, John, and you mentioned Le Pen there, right? The danger is that when you don't have a stake, right, in society, you might not have a stake, but you have a vote.
Absolutely.
And it's very, very easy to burn the house down if you don't own a house. While you're there now, and I hope you're still enjoying this malarkey, because John and I are certainly enjoying it. Thank you very, very much to our Patreons. And if you're not a Patreon and you feel like supporting us and you fancy all sorts of exclusive goodies, just go to patreon.com/David McWilliams.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're concerned about mental health or looking to get into self-improvement, join me at the Piece by Piece podcast. There, I'm interviewing everyday people and experts alike about how to overcome difficulties around mental health. Speaking of which, I just released an interview with a mental health historian and another with two friends who are healthcare workers.
If these conversations interest you, check us out at Piece by Piece. That's Piece with an A, B-I, and then Piece with an I. Thank you so much.